I'll start off by echoing what Bill said earlier. I think in order to have a viable experiment station entity, you have to be really closely tied together. And that's not only with campus entities, but also the constituents. And so you'll notice I actually wear all three hats. We don't have our extension experiment station all housed in one college, but they all respond and report to one individual. I have annual meetings with the deans and department heads, and they all clearly understand that I control the funds for those. And in fact, in my fourth year, I actually have pulled funding from some of those colleges because the faculty have not been able to meet expectations in some of those areas. So we have 8 colleges on campus. I'm the dean of the College of Agriculture and Applied Sciences. I run one of the ways that I help faculty or incentivize faculty to work together is that I run a couple of seed grant programs, both from the experiment station as well as extension side, and we can very carefully craft the RFP for those to ensure that we actually meet some of the emerging needs in our state, as well as help folks partner together from both the experiment station and extension side. Now, our experiment station, and I have a little different approach. I'm going to go through a little bit of the history as well as talk about some of the emerging needs that we are trying to address. Our experiment station actually predates the university. It was in existence prior to 1888 when the campus of Utah State University was first created. And obviously, a lot of things have changed in that period of time. We have different issues that we need to address. We have some of the same issues. We live in a very dry state. Nevada's number one. We're number two. And so water is always a very important consideration for us. This is a farm where the history of it has been predominantly on forage and water conservation, but as you can see, we also have a changing environment from the standpoint of our urban population. Utah is really a rural state, and again, I think our colleagues in Nevada, I think we have a lot of similarities to Nevada. We have a little strip referred to as the Wasatch Front where about 85% of our population exists and resides. That certainly is clearly a classical urban environment, but the remainder of the state is very open, very, very vast, and has some very interesting and unique characteristics about it. We've certainly, from the first photo I changed, excuse me, the first photo I showed, we've certainly changed, and you can see here. The experiment station part of one of our experiment station farms, and again, what we've tried to do is in some of these urban environments where we have experiment stations, we've tried to actually partner those with extension facilities. And this shows you an example of that where we have the research. I'm not really good at this, as you can tell. I need the pointer. The bottom half of the picture. The bottom half of the picture is our extension site. Okay, all right. It keeps going forward. I don't know why.
There we go.
So this bottom portion. Here's the delineation. This line across here. This bottom portion is an extension facility, and it continues way off out of view. And then the top half is part of our experiment station facility. And what we do is we have ongoing research projects on that facility that then graduate down to the extension facility where folks can look at various varieties of apples, peaches, apricots, grapes, berries, and so forth. But you can also see the very close association that we have with our urban neighbors over here. So it's created a new opportunity for us to be able to to insist on communicating with those folks. And actually, we have very good relationships with those folks in those communities. And oftentimes, if we're going to do anything that's a little out of the ordinary, we try and have little neighborhood opportunities for those folks to come on site and have some of our faculty there to explain exactly what's going on so that they can better understand and not left to their own imagination, which I think has been very important for us as we've moved forward. Now, this next slide that I've been dying to get to, as I keep illustrates several of our facilities and where they're located. The view on the left is really of primarily what we refer to as the Cache Valley. That's the valley where Utah State University's mothership resides in Logan, Utah. Each of those facilities have different goals and unique aspects that they're designed to achieve. I'll talk about a couple of them. Just for example, number one, the Blue Creek Farm, is composed of 90 acres. That was started in 1960, and it was started because at that time there was a fungal contamination, I believe it's called smut, dwarf smut, and that threatened to wipe out the wheat farmers in Utah and in parts of Idaho. And so a coalition of those producers got together, purchased 40 acres, and donated to the university, at which then served the foundation for the research to be able to solve that. And we had a wheat breeder at the time that actually came to the rescue with a new variety of wheat that was able to be resistant to this particular disease. But certainly, as most of you know, and I'm not an agronomist, I'll admit that right up, I'm a reproductive biologist, so this is actually the first time I've been to this conference. But that wheat breeding program has continued through and including today, and even in 1992, some agribusinesses and again producers got together and purchased another 50 acres, combined that with the 40, which is what results in that 90-acre facility. And it continues to be the mothership for that research. It continues to have annual farm presentations where we invite all of the producers in the area to come and see the ongoing research going on that particular piece of property. A couple of other places I'd like to point out, the irrigated farm, number two, that's composed of about 111 acres. That was created in 2005, and it was established with a long-term lease with a family trust, and it established a place in where we conduct forage research. It's focused on forage development that's viable under intensively managed systems, primarily grazing systems. We have primarily cattle and sheep that we run in there and basically select different legumes and forages that seem to work better under those high-intensity conditions. And certainly, again, it's another facility where we have field days and invite producers and clientele throughout the state and region to come and to see the things that are going on and the research that is evolving from that facility. The last two facilities I'll point out, 13, I already mentioned that Kaysville farm, and then 14 is the Nephi farm. And interestingly enough, Nephi farm is composed of 95 acres. Research at that facility actually began in 1903 and continues today on dryland grains and rangelands forages. And to our knowledge, it's the oldest continuously operated facility, such facility in the country. So all of these facilities all compose what we refer to as our experiment station system. And for the most part, I'll come back to the Cache Junction. It's the largest piece of ground that we have, 562 acres. For the most part, these facilities fit research-driven projects. Cache Junction has a little bit different role that I'll touch on in just a minute. So in addition to the farms, the experiment station also supports the Utah Climate Center. We have over 125 remote automated stations that collect climate data. It's accessible to our climate researchers. It also drives data out to the Utah Agricultural Weather Network. This provides data not only for our scientists but also for regional producers to be able to track important data that they need to track relative to their growing seasons. It also collaborates, this data collaborates with our entomologists to produce integrated pest management electronic newsletters. It also drives data to apps that our faculty have created, not only for the pest management side, but also from the climate side, and be able to track changes in climate. This is a view of the Cache Junction farm that I referred to, 562 acres. This was purchased prior to my tenure in my current position, and I think was a really valuable acquisition. It primarily, as I think I'll show in the next slide, it primarily produces the forages that we use to feed the animal farms that we have. So every ton of feed that we can generate is a ton less that we don't have to purchase. So in the years, alfalfa's kind of come down a little bit in the past couple of years, but it's not too many years ago where it was in that $250, $260 an acre. And so you can quickly go broke having to pay for that in the open market. So you can see we grow things like corn, alfalfa, barley, oat hay, and so forth. Again, all of these commodities we send to our farms that house our animals. We have interesting animal facilities in that we have facilities where we support research on goats, sheep, both dairy and beef cattle, as well as horses. We have a small teaching pig unit. Some of the needs for these have obviously changed over the years. We've had kind of a shift in focus from classical production agriculture, although we still have that. And I think the close association between, comes back to a point Bill made earlier, the close association between our basic researchers that oftentimes are on campus and those more applied folks that we find in our extension positions is critical, because it helps some of our commodity groups and our producers understand what things are going on now that may help them in the next year or two, but also more, and sometimes more importantly, understand why some of the research is ongoing that will help them in the next 5 to 10 to 15 years. And that's very important from our perspective to foster that relationship. I have an expectation all of our extension specialists, they have to go and give presentations and be a part of planning committees for our commodity groups so that they can ensure they have a session where they can talk about the emerging research that's going on at Utah State University. You know, we have the same issues that our counterparts that are in production agriculture have. This is an example where we lost about 30% of our high moisture corn because of sandhill cranes. And there's not a whole lot you can do about that. You just grin and bear it and move forward. But I think the more we are able to collect data on these situations, we can also be a help to some of those folks in our communities to be able to deal with those same issues. This is a a field view or a drone view of our Greenville farm. This particular farm has been in existence for over 100 years. It's the closest farm that we have to campus. It's probably about less than a half mile from the heart of campus. And so there are a lot of researchers that utilize this facility. And certainly the uses have changed. And we certainly, things start out in the laboratory, they then graduate to the greenhouse, and then they end up on this facility. And you can see that as you look at this, researchers subdivide this even after they take the plots that we assign them. We make sure that we coordinate. Make sure that we closely coordinate the research that goes on in these facilities. It's not wise to put a plot of weeds that somebody's needing to generate weed seed right next to a plot where the investigator needs a weed-free plot. And so we coordinate that very closely. The research on here is everything from weed control, small grains, irrigation research and soil physics, turf grass, as well as nutrient movement, drought-resistant landscape plants, and high tunnels. You can see some of the high tunnels to the left of that slide. And certainly the water is a very critical area of research, water conservation. In fact, this last year, we were successful in receiving a new million-dollar allocation from the legislature. We used a lot of our constituents groups to go and lobby for that money, and it was basically targeted to providing more tools that our constituents can use, particularly in agriculture, to begin to look at conserving water. Our state probably is not much different than in any of the other western states. About 80% of the water that the state has is used in agriculture. So I made the commitment. Again, as a small state, I do a lot of the one-on-ones with legislators myself. So a big part of this was for us to hire a new extension specialist that was going to focus primarily on agriculture, water conservation, and providing new, there are a lot of tools that can help with that in today's arena. So again, this just gives you an illustration of that farm that I just spoke about, and you can see how it's been broken up. It's about 100 acres, I think, of ground. It has a whole myriad of uses and research that it supports. And again, because of its close linkage or geographical location close to the heart of campus, it's certainly a very popular and heavy used facility. There's a lot of difference. This is, again, an early picture. There's a lot of difference in what we worry about nowadays. As compared when experiment station facilities were in existence, they were usually surrounded by a lot of other agricultural lands. And today, it's just not that same environment. So security and signage has become an important consideration. I'll just tell you a couple of stories that you're probably going to think are not believable, but we had a trial going on, a watermelon trial going on, and there's always a fine line. Constituents are kind of interesting sometimes in what they believe, and taxpayers that they should be able to come and partake of state facilities. And so, he showed up to collect some data, and several watermelons were missing. Or we had one of our farm managers noticed a van and a truck pulling into the back part of this, in the orchard area to this research farm. He tracked them back there, and it was a family that was unloading, with a photographer that was unloading a couch to take a family picture there. So, you have to be somewhat sensitive. This is our animal facilities, one of our heart of our animal facilities. That road that you see in the distance is 8991. Almost everyone who travels to Yellowstone travels on that road. So this farm has a lot of research that goes on relative to transgenic research. So we have transgenic animals on this facility. We have horses. We host a lot of horse events. Our rodeo team, our equestrian team is on. So managing population and citizen movement on these facilities becomes a very important issue. And you know, you want to give some signage that basically helps inform people, but not necessarily lets their imagination run wild. I'd like to tell you that we were able to purchase as much farm equipment as possible, but we don't. And that's primarily because of some of the constraints. I don't want these facilities pulling out on highways where people are going, I mean, they're supposed to be going 60 miles an hour, but oftentimes you find 70 and 75. So we have to duplicate a lot of equipment. This is a cane dairy. This is still one of the premier teaching and research dairy facilities, certainly in the western area, but it's becomes a challenge to how do you keep up with technology. Holstein World ranked this as the number one university dairy, but it's difficult to keep up. We're going to make a $1 million investment to bring in robotics, but it's going to result in us having to cut back on animal numbers because those robotic systems, although it's state-of-the-art technology, those robots only handle about 60 animals, and I don't have the funds to, I mean, they're about $400,000 a piece to get those things installed and everything. So it becomes a limiting factor in what you can do and when you can do it. I think my time is about over. I'll close out. We just had a farm that was donated. It's about a 400-acre farm. I didn't show it on there, but this was from an alumni and a family who was an alumni at Rutgers University and did a substantial amount of research on various orchard species and actually used this piece of ground as an experiment station for him. So we're not going to solve world hunger by growing pistachios or almonds in Utah, but some of the varieties that we're looking at, our scientists are looking at, may create new opportunities and new varieties that our Utah clientele can utilize. And certainly it's a changing environment in agriculture. And hopefully some of that research will meet the new needs within our state and maybe even the region. Thank you.
Thank you. I have one question.
Yes,
Bill. I'm just curious, if you have an underperforming faculty member with experiment station appointment, but they're tenured, how do you dress that with the provost? Or?
Yeah, it creates a lot of leverage with the dean and the department head. You know, whether it has the weight with the faculty members, another story. But, you know, those are issues that, I mean, my responsibility is to make sure that I'm the steward of those funds and to make sure that those funds support what they're designed to support, not to basically fund somebody who's not achieving. So, again, it's not like I don't want to leave the impression that I just yanked the money, but I give fair warning. I give an adequate amount of time for a change in behavior, and then if the change doesn't occur, I bring the money back, and then it's that dean and department head's problem to figure out how they're going to fund the tenure faculty member.
Anything else?